and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest today is Sadhu Da. I assume I'm still saying that correctly.
Yep.
All right, and our topic today is Gumanthong. Well, let's talk first a little bit about you and what you do to let our audience know. Of course, you've been on before a couple few months back, but let's remind them. What would you classify yourself as? I mean, I know you got a diverse collection of belief systems and ideas. So what would you call yourself?
In a nutshell, I'd consider myself a spiritual teacher and an occult professor. And you know, in Thai culture, an occult professor would be known as an Ajarn. So that would be more closely related to kind of encapsulating all of what I do.
So yeah, I got to hop right in here now. I'm interested. You know, when you say occult, I'm like, first thing I think of is Lovecraft and Miskatonic and stuff. In Thailand, you say that they have a separate name. Is this something that they would take, for lack of a better word, more seriously than it's taken here?
Yes.
As a profession?
Yes. I mean, there are people who seek that out as a career. You know, one of the things that's very common in Thai culture is you'll have a lot of young men who will join, you know, the temples and go under monkhood, and they'll become a bhikkhu, you know, in Theravada Buddhist culture from Thailand, that would be a monk. So they become a bhikkhu, they become ordained for, you know, a couple years, kind of get their feet wet. If it's not for them, it's not for them. But some of them will learn magic or, you know, Thai witcha. Different traditions of certain practices of making like amulets or doing like love spells and charms and like wealth and prosperity for businesses and et cetera, just like a whole manner of things. And then you'll get people who are considered like lay persons with magic. And these are people who may not ever become a monk, or they might become a monk and then leave the monkhood. And they'll choose to embark on this career where they study under Lersi, Ruisi, Ajarns, Krubar Ajarns, and all these different like classifications of like what we would call like spiritual teachers, who teach certain types of traditions and practices. And so it's a huge, huge part of the culture. It saturates it all the way through its core. I mean, you can go and see like a schoolhouse or a government building and just out in public, because like 98% of Thailand is Theravada Buddhist, you'll see what are called Samprakum, which are these little spirit houses. And they're all out in public, and like they're, you know, given offerings, and they're to appease local spirits in the land. So, I mean, these practices are deeply rooted because, you know, Siam, as it was formerly known before it was Thailand, was very animistic, you know, like think of like shamans and like Native American culture and some of those animistic traditions and practices. This has been like a longstanding part of Thailand's culture and history, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so like what ended up happening in the 14th century was, you know, the king was trying to convert people to Buddhism, and it didn't fully stick and take over, because you had so many people that did things like gnat worship, and they were like, well, you know, we've been praying to these coconuts and these spirits for like, you know, generations. Like, you're not just going to tell us that we need to start worshiping this Buddha guy. And, you know, what do we care? We have our own practices and traditions. Well, then it kind of became mandatory. And then So as we know with conversion, you know, especially like in like African cultures and the slave trade and how they would pray to these statues of the saints, but they were really praying to their voodoo gods and stuff like that. So like, you know, they kind of continued the same thing. And so you get this beautiful emergence of a truly unique form of Buddhism where you have these animistic and old and very like occult, you know, magic traditions influenced in with Buddhism. And so you have people that will go and they'll study it and they seek to learn how to make these different amulets and charms and do these different spell practices for the community.
You know, it's weird how the commonalities of man across the globe, you know, because it doesn't sound much different than the Holy Roman Empire coming into Europe and Britain, you know, how they end up merging a lot of that stuff. And, you know, Christmas we know is a combination of Yule and Saturnalia and all this stuff, Halloween and, All Saints Day, All Souls Day, you know, so it's kind of like an appropriation of the religion, but the religion lives on within it.
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. You know, so, but there, this whole countrywide, so even here, you know, thousands of years later, countrywide, this whole view of mysticism is accepted? Or religion-wide? Or would this be like this sort of Kabbalah sect of the religion at this point?
Oh, no, it is, it's so deeply ingrained that it's just part of everyday society. I mean, I'm sure maybe you've gone into like, you know, a local donut shop or nail salon or something that's like, whether it be Cambodian, Vietnamese or Thai owned business or, even like a Malaysian owned business. And, you know, a lot of these, like these Asian and like South, Asian like countries will have, you know, statues of like Neng Kwok for like luck. You see like a, you know, like a statue of a lady, you know, and then they have like coins or they have like incense they're burning and stuff. And it's just, you know, they're in their business, you know, here in America, but like that comes from, you know, their home country. And right. It's like such a common practice because like Neng Kwok was the daughter of a merchant. And, you know, it comes from an old Buddhist story where, you know, the Buddha had told this merchant who often would have trouble selling his wares. And he had this daughter whose name was Neng Kwok. And Neng Kwok would always want to go with him. But like the father wouldn't take her with him because I don't know, like maybe he figured she was going to get in the way of the business, that kind of thing. Well, the Buddha told her, told the merchant, you know, bring your daughter with you and you will sell out all your wares. And so he did. And from that day forward, he would always bring her with him. And so at some point, you know, that story became kind of like canonized in a sense. And, you know, so much so did Neng Kwok and her image and the representation of her and abundance and wealth with business practices. So now you have like Fa Yant, like so these cloths that have like an image of her stamped on it with like poly Khmer like sigils and spells on there. And so like these are sold to business merchants and they're said to like bring blessings and fortune to their business. And it's just such a common thing. Like you go into any of these kind of like shops and you'll see it or at least like statues, representations of like Neng Kwok. And that's just like one aspect. You know, you'll have like amulets and charms, like, you know, some of the ones I wear and, you know, the Thai police will wear like takruts. So do the Muay Thai boxers like around their arms and they're said to protect from like accidents and injury. And, you know, it's just, it's a normal part of culture. Just kind of the same here in America where everybody's not Christian, but nobody bats an eye if someone says I'm a Christian or if someone starts to pray. Right. And, you know, like it's very common. We're used to that being like a dominant form of religion that's, you know, not to say it rudely, but it's so in your face that whether you're a Christian or not, you just kind of accept that like that's going to kind of be around you. And it's just part of the culture here in America. And it's very same in like Thailand and Malaysia and Cambodia and, you know, Vietnam. Like you just see these kind of things everywhere.
Right. So not not too dissimilar from a pendant of St. Christopher when you're traveling.
Right, exactly.
And I was raised Catholic. I didn't make it very far. My mom was over it pretty quick.
Hi, this is Billy Pilgrim from my buddy Doug Tooley from BNT 241-3474. You need to know that number, 241-3474, for the best service. Doug and his great crew at BNT makes TV so easy. They're the experts. They do TV wall mounts. They did one for us. TV antennas, surround sound. They can even set up your RV or set up your boat. Doug doesn't do dishes, but he'll dust behind your TV. So for all your TV entertainment needs, no matter what it is, call the local guys. Call my buddy Doug Tooley, the nicest man in the world, at 241-3474. 241-3474. They'll be there on time. They'll get the job done on time, and you're good to go.
With over 60 years of combined experience, let us, your locally owned TV guys, help you. We know what we are doing. You can trust us.
Call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474.
Doug makes TV easy.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at estategranite.com.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Radio Waveland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Waveland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Waveland.
Gooman Thong.
Yeah.
Thailand's little golden boy. What? There has to be something lost in translation in this title. So the
eerie thing is, so Gooman Thong is essentially like a spirit effigy, and the reason why it's called Thailand's little golden boy is because it's now illegal. But the way that they used to be made was, and this would fall into like Barang, which is like black magic or like Thai voodoo. And what's really interesting to me is, you know, we immediately hear the word black magic, or we think of like voodoo, and our mind kind of conjures all these dark thoughts, like people hurting each other, curses, hexes, that kind of thing. You know, we think of like evil people preying on other individuals, and that's not really the case. See, in Thailand, especially with Thai magic, it's not so black and white, so to speak, no pun intended. But it's more of like, what is the intention behind it, regardless of the origin? So that kind of is, you know, of most importance. So this would be black magic, yes, but not in the sense of what the Western mind considers black magic. So you
I have to explain this a lot of the time when I'm talking to Christian. I'm a horror movie fan, and I'll talk to, and they're all, oh, I don't like the demon stuff. And, you know, we'll be talking about it, and like Asian cultures will use the word demon. So like my kids will watch anime and they're hucking around the word demon. And I'm like trying to explain to people. I'm just, oh, that's not a direct, you know, translation.
Right. Term.
Sorry, but go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. So the Gooman Thong, it's illegal now. But the way that they used to be made, and the reason why it was called Thailand's little golden boy, was a stillborn fetus would be taken and roasted and charred over a fire in a cemetery while prayers and chants were, you know, performed over it, and certain ritual practices to appease, like, you know, the guardian of the cemetery and, you know, land spirits were performed. And then after it was charred, then it would be covered in gold leaf. And then the spirit of the stillborn child would then be adopted. And so it has like a very dark origin, but when you think about the way that people in Thai culture are seeing this and working with the spirit, it's actually kind of beautiful. So regardless of your beliefs, take into account this is the beliefs of the Thai people. So what they believe is that, when a spirit will reincarnate, if it has not gotten to live a full life, so the full potential of an entire life, the stillborn spirit has been robbed of. So it's kind of like wandering around in the bardo or, like River Styx. So it's out there just alone. And the time it would take for it to actually reincarnate on its own and then be given another chance to live the human experience can be so far off in the future. So when these monks or these Ajarn or these different like Mofai and these spiritual practitioners who are taught how to do this specific type of Thai Witcha do this, they're kind of given this spirit like a contract. The spirit can kind of say no to this. It's not bound and restricted into this object. But what happens is the merit of a person who will adopt the statue is shared with this spirit. And when I say merit, I mean the good deeds, how they help other people when they donate to charities, when they're kind. So these good karmic acts that they create, they're sharing it with this Kuomintang so that when this Kuomintang achieves enough accumulation of merit that it wouldn't have the chance to achieve because it never got to live a full life, it will then be able to reincarnate faster and it's going to have a higher incarnation when it reincarnates. So it's kind of like a huge, benefit to the spirit to like help, this business owner or to help this person find a lover or, the protection or gambling and things like that. They're used in very, base level desire kind of things.
There's a couple things that are really weird about this, and my comparison that I've thought about a lot is, and I know this is weird, but I'm going someplace with it, is like circumcision. It's very common in the Western world. Getting less common, but I think like who was the first, the question might be who was the first dude who did this to somebody. But my question is who were the first parents that are just all like, yeah, okay, that's a good idea. You should test that out on my kid, And so here we are in this situation and they're just all, okay, listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cook your baby that didn't live and we're going to wrap it in gold and then we're going to use that to provide ourselves with our basic desires. That's kind of what it sounds like. It sounds a little rude.
Well, it came from, Kun Pain.
And I'm not trying to come down on people's belief system. I'm just saying.
No, it's something very bizarre and foreign to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even considered weird at all. And most, of Thai people, they're like, oh yeah, Kuomintang. And they're all like, yeah, little golden boy, like it's not even like weird thing. And there's a lot of amulets that have like Chinathon, which is like human bone. And there's like, Namen Prey oil, which is like human chin fat melted, from a grave. Like, I mean, they use like human body remains and like a lot of
amulets. A lot of chin fat.
I mean, I have a bottle of Namen Prey oil.
You have a bottle of chin fat back there?
Yeah.
All right. That can't be legal.
I mean, it's not illegal per se.
It's frowned upon. It's highly frowned upon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like, what's the goose liver? I don't know. It's all over the chef shows. Yeah. Okay. So that is weird, but I'm going to try to look at it from that standpoint. And that is the standpoint of community. Here's the unrealized life of this child. And now this unrealized life of this child now gets to be a part of the community and help us all move forward, maybe.
Yeah. And the way that it was first applied. So this is kind of like a modern day aspect of how they're used because things kind of evolve over time. But it came from this old Thai legend about like this general known as Kun Pain. And Kun Pain, you know, it's a pretty violent story, but then again, in a lot of like Thai love stories and like old tales, like they're very violent. And so Kun Pain, he killed his wife. I don't remember the reason why. I don't want to misquote it, but I know that he killed his wife. His wife was pregnant and he didn't realize it. And then when he realized what he had done, he decided to rip the stillborn fetus from the wife's body. And then he, like, you know, created the first Gumin Thong. And so then he used that Gumin Thong to, like, crush his enemies. And, you know, that was like a whole thing. But the way that it became adopted into Thai culture was like parents who had lost a child. You know, it was a very, very emotional thing. It's a very painful experience to go through. And they didn't necessarily want to say goodbye or let that go. And they had a hard time grieving. So it would take it, you know, this stillborn child to monks or to these Ajarn, and they would ask them to turn it into a Gumin Thong. And then part of the practices that go into taking care of a Gumin Thong is you buy it little toys and you give it, you know, meals. When you eat meals, like, you set food aside and you feed the Gumin Thong, like, you know, you offer it to come and eat with you. And like, you talk to it like a child and you praise it and you speak with it. So like, for all intents and purposes, even if you weren't understanding the occult aspect of this, one could see from a Western mindset, psychologically speaking, how for a parent who is grieving the loss of their child who died prematurely, that this could be very therapeutic in a sense. Yeah. You know, as strange as it may be, you could see how that could be very therapeutic for a grieving parent. So there is that aspect of it in the culture. How there are people who literally have like their own child that, you know, was stillborn and they've turned it into a Gumin Thong and they're raising this child, even though they're not physically alive.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter of 2021 and 22. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already, we are experiencing record-high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, "Our customers are warm friends." We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high-priced winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
I can guarantee you one of the questions going through anybody's head listening to this, and me as well, is what does this thing look like after it's made?
So now we have an understanding of, like, the illegal practice that's no longer done, but we have now effigies that are made. For example, so they'll use human bone ash, and they'll make it like a little statue, as you can see.
Yeah, it's like a black statue of a baby with some gold on its head and dressed in cloth.
Yes. So this is a Guomindang, and then you also have ones that are made like as like a statue or like an amulet. So like a statue one, a wooden one I have, I'll show you. This would be this one right here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so a wooden statue that's been painted with gold, and it's small, like a large chess piece.
Yeah, so what they'll often do is they'll still do the traditional ceremony of, like, calling the spirit and the occult practices behind that, the chanting of the kata, you know, the infusing of the spirit into the object. But what makes it a Guomindang there's two requirements. One, it has to be the spirit of a child that died in birth. And then it also has to be like in the effigy of like, you know, like a little boy. So Kumari Thong would be a little girl. So a Gumen Thong would be a little boy. So, you know, there are female versions of it and there are male versions of it, but the male ones, for some reason, I don't know why, I couldn't honestly answer, those tend to be more popular. And then you even have what are called Lukrak, which is like an aborted one. So that's like an entirely different thing. So like that is like the, you know, the spirit was never even like, you know, like fully formed. So almost like you could say like, you know, just like the cells of it, mm-hmm. like, you know, like if you were to get an abortion and, you know, it's not even like fully formed as like, right. you know,
so
a baby yet.
Would a miscarriage count for that as well then?
Yeah. So those would be Lukrak. So there's Lukrak and there's Gumen Thong. Gumen Thong would indicate that, you know, like it was stillborn. So like, it, you know, it had actually reached, you know, the full end of gestation essentially, or enough to be like fully formed as an actual baby.
Now, when you showed me this, so when you were first telling me this, I didn't think of it as being bone ash that had been molded. I was thinking that they're cooking the blood. Like dried out, you know, what was the original one?
That's how they were
a little more grotesque, I assume.
Yeah. Like it would be an actual, like literal baby carcass. And like they would generally like, so what would happen is, there was like a very common practice where like hospitals would like drop these off at the temples. And then the monks would do the whole ceremony, or like parents would go, you know, to like an Ajarn, or they would go to like a monk and they would have them make it, or they would get permission from a family member who had say over this, and they would actually go to the graveyard and dig up the child's corpse. So like, that's how it used to be done, but in Thailand, they made that illegal. So now, if you do that, you will go to prison. You know, you will get in a lot of trouble, and they're not allowed to be sold anymore. However, because, you know, adaptation, that's when it started moving into making the statues from, like, basically, like, you know, clay mixed with actual bone ash. So like now they're not using the actual corpses anymore, but they're still using corpse ingredients, which for some reason isn't illegal. don't really get that.
I'm sure there's a health factor going on here.
Right.
Yeah. So what about here? I mean, so I got this friend, I'll leave his name out, in high school, we all played in bands together. It's a funny story. You know how when you get sick, you get a gland will swell up,
mm-hmm.
you know, on your neck or something. Well, for him, it was his left testicle. And Oof. He couldn't show up to band practice because his left testicle had swollen up to the size of a softball and died, and they had to remove it. And another band member said, oh yeah, no, oh, totally, man. I won't tell anybody. And he went and told everybody at school the next day. But,
of course.
But they wouldn't let him keep it. You know, we were like, oh, did you get to keep the testicle? But they wouldn't let him keep it. So it's like, I assume I guess you get bone, you can have a stillborn baby cremated and they'll give you the ash, I guess. Won't they?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, you have the right to like to bury. I mean, so it's weird because like I haven't really encountered that over here. So I don't know. Like, you know, I would imagine it's probably not legal. What is it like desiccating a corpse or something like that? I mean, right. I know there yeah. are like charges you can get for that. And I mean, clearly in Thailand, you know, it's much easier to get away with going into a cemetery and doing things versus over here. You know, we tend to have security guards and things like that. Things tend to be a little more lax over in Thailand. And in Thailand, like, you know, they'll let you, like, keep your organs and stuff like that when you leave the hospital. Things are, they're different, you know, they're different than over here. So, you know, that's kind of why that was kind of a thing for a while before it stopped being a thing. But yeah, I can't imagine that you would really be able to make one of those over here legally without, you know, some sort of suspicion or repercussion. Or if you, like, you know, let's say, like, you had a girlfriend or wife, or for whatever reason, you know, they were down for that and y'all actually did that. If you tried to sell it or started showing, telling people about it, I'm pretty sure the cops would knock on your door at some point relatively soon.
Right. Yeah. All right. So you were showing me, the amulet that you were wearing, and we were talking about this, is, do they turn, or would you wear the Guman thong?
Yeah. They do have amulets that are, like, small enough that you can wear. So this one I have is a Bayage, which is a different type of amulet. It's like cowrie shell filled with mercury. And then it's sealed. And so, like, it's got, like, poly spells on it. It's used for, like, protection and, like, repelling black magic and things of that nature. And by black magic, I mean the stuff that's specifically set to harm you. The Guman Thong, like, necklaces and stuff that you could have, like, I have one, that I've been working on, cause I make amulets as well. This one was, like, an actual necklace, but I turned this into, like, a spirit box, and I added stuff to, like, empower it further. But you can see how this would fit into a locket, you know?
Right. I see.
It's the representation of the baby.
Yeah, it's like it was pressed, and then it could be turned into a locket, right?
Yeah, so those will have, like, holy powders, bone ash, like different herbs and stuff, and like clays, and then it'll be like mixed together. And it's really interesting because, like, a lot of the ingredients that are added together for power tend to be things that would sometimes make scholars' heads just flip. Like, to make some of the holy powders that the monks make, this just sounds like, why would you do that? So they will take the oldest, most sacred and rare, like, Buddhist, like, books, you know, that they'll have, and, like, scriptures, and, like, you know, like, and we're talking really, really old, like, very valuable. And they'll take the pages from it, and they'll burn them, and they'll use the ash and mix it in with other ingredients. And it's like, why would you do that? Well, the rareness and the sacredness of it, like, you know, is considered to give it more power. So then that becomes like ingredient, because when you add all those ingredients together, along with the kata, like the chanting, activating and calling the spirit and encoding with like the commands, and then you put the spirit in the object, all those sacred ingredients add to be like a battery, right? So they give the spirit, you know, juice to operate off of, rather than you just basically having, you know, this human spirit that might normally attach and feed on you. So then it has an actual source, an object, you know, fetish or totem, right? That it can feed off of and accrue, reciprocal energy that just is constantly feeding it. And so it's able to do things without having to have a human host to feed from.
Thank you. North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR1460.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Listening to Free Fire Radio 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
And then you have this picture of this person on this amulet that's being sold. And you know, it kind of puts it into a different context and gives it a different, you know, feeling entirely than like my Peepong, you know, spirit over here. When you're looking at the picture, like of an actual like girl in her late teens, early 20s, like an actual picture of her, and you're realizing like the spirit of her and how she died, you know, and that's in that amulet, you know, like that one's, I'm kind of on the fence with that, because, like, you know, I'm not necessarily, like, you know, really into those.
Yeah, well, I mean, it does feel like it's, and again, I'm just going to throw out
too personal
thinking. I'm not, well, it seems on the brink of exploitive.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I think of it, so, like, I have this tattoo, you know, as my cousin Chris. So my cousin Chris, unfortunately, he was drinking and driving last year in April. And so it's been a little over a year now. And he passed away. And, you know, it was a violent death. You know, it was horrible. And he was young. You know, he's 27. And I miss him greatly. And, like, I have some of the pieces from the wreckage site. And, like, I have pieces of glass from the windshield that he went through that has this blood on it. And I don't use that as an amulet at all whatsoever. I actually made sure that I crossed the spirit over. But I keep that as, like, just, like, you know, it's something close to me, because, like, it's all that I have left of him, you know? And so, like, that's kind of a completely different type of, you know, item that I have. Like, it's not even used for magical purposes whatsoever. I would feel very emotional about somebody taking those pieces of glass with my cousin's blood on it and turning it into an amulet. I would have an issue with that. So, nice. Like, I get what you're saying. Like that is exploitive.
So it has to be a part of the person's belief system, and all. And frankly, it's better than a lot of people here in the West do. You know, it's like I'm constantly driving around, and I'll see, like, somebody's Cadillac Escalade, and it's got a big sticker on the back window that says, like, "In loving memory of John Smith," and that's all it says. And I'm all, does that mean the car is in loving memory of John Smith? You know, what does this sticker mean? So my message to people out there is, don't put a sticker on your car that makes it look like your car is in memory to a dead person. It's weird.
It is weird. I mean, I'm kind of like, because, like, I'm a stranger. I have no idea who anyone in your family or your loved ones are.
Yeah.
And then the only thing I'm knowing about you, a complete stranger that I wouldn't be paying attention to at all, is, like, oh, you know, that person in your life died and I'm staring at their photo. You know, right. Or I'm, like, reading their death dates. Like, I don't need to know that. Like, I understand.
Like, did they want an escalated life? Why?
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.